please.
Good evening. I'm an alcoholic, and my name's Steve. Leslie's not here. Leslie asked me here a couple weeks ago to come and do this, I wanted to say I want to thank Leslie, but I'm not sure that I want to thank Leslie for asking me to do this. I have to be honest with you, I'm quite nervous right now. I don't know why. I've spoken numerous times, but this is a little bit different. But I was thinking a little bit earlier before I came over here, and I was thinking about, what I was going to say and so on. And I was thinking back when I first got sober, when I first come to Alcoholics Anonymous, I have to tell you that when I first came here, I don't believe I came here to get sober. I really don't. I had been introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous a few years earlier, but I obviously didn't stick around. I came here because, in my mind, I wanted all that bad stuff to stop happening, and I didn't know how to stop it. I didn't know what to do, and I didn't know at that point in time that by coming here that I was going to be taking a look at myself, which is the last thing I wanted to do, and start into this journey of a whole new life. I had no idea when I came here that's what I was in for. And it's been quite a journey, I'll tell you. It's just been an awesome journey. We're talking about step one tonight, and it's all based on step one, this whole thing for me, and where I've come and where I'm at today, and what God has shown me and what you people have given me, is all based on my finally being able to admit and accept the fact that I'm powerless, and it wasn't an easy thing to do. Before I get into this, I just want to share a couple things with you about myself. I do have a sponsor. His name's Andy Daniels. He'll be celebrating 40 years of sobriety this year. And Andy and I go way back. Andy was a drinking buddy of my dad, so he knew me long before I came into these rooms. But Andy's a very, very instrumental part of my life today. He's my third sponsor, he's very important in my life today. I have a sobriety date, and that is July 15th of 1989, so God willing, if I make it a couple more months, I'll have celebrated 26 years of continuous sobriety, and that just amazes me. That really does. For me to stand up here and say that, it just intrigues me. In home group, I those are the three things that are really, really vitally important to me today. And that sponsorship, a sobriety date, and my home group. And my home group actually will be meeting in a little over an hour out in Northeast. It's a Grape City group. It's an open speaker meeting, and it meets at 8 o'clock. It's a First Presbyterian Church in Northeast. And a few years back, I picked up a second home group, and that meets on Monday night in Northeast, and that's a big book in 12 and 12 reading and discussion group. And that has become, for me, vitally my most important meeting that I attend. There she is. because I love the big book, and I love the 12 and 12. And I think the steps and the traditions are what my life is all about today. A big book and 12 and 12 reading and discussion group is vitally important in my life. But I was thinking also about, alcoholism and AA and recovery and over the years, how things change. We change, how we look change, how we comb our hair and how we dress, where we work, the cars we drive, where we live. Even AA changes, from way back when till today. But the one thing that has not changed with the alcoholic, I truly believe, and never will, is that common denominator that we share, that one common denominator, and that's suffering. And for me, suffering is what step one is all about. It really is. The level of suffering that I had to reach before I was able to finally bring myself to that point of adhering to these steps in this program. And suffering for me, it doesn't matter if I'm new to AA or if I've been around here a while. It doesn't matter if I'm at a meeting or I don't know anybody. I've been at meetings in Mexico that were Spanish-speaking meetings, and I don't speak Spanish. But I still could, I could still relate. I was still part of. You know, it's like the saying goes, to those that aren't alcoholic, no explanation will work, and to those that are, none's necessary. I don't need to explain to you people what's going on inside and how I felt and what happened and how things are and vice versa. You know, it's that common denominator, it's that thing, that common bond that we have. And it's that language of the heart, it's how we feel in here. And I truly believe that, you know. And I believe, like I said, that the suffering is our common denominator. And I believe with all my heart that step one deals with this. And step one deals with total honesty and humility. And that's two things my sponsor and I talk about this quite often. And that's two things that the alcoholic, and I know myself anyways, struggles with. And even sometimes today. But definitely in the beginning, I knew nothing about honesty, and I definitely was not a humble person, that's for sure. I didn't know anything about it. And step one deals with that. Step one, as I know it, deals with total honesty and humility. And I believe that step one comes from everything in my life leading up to my bottom. And for me, I was told long ago, the definition of a bottom is when the last thing you lost or the next thing you're about to lose suddenly becomes more important than the next drink. Now, I don't know, honestly, what that was with me. I can't honestly tell you what that next thing was. I think it was my freedom, because I was a jailbird. So I think it was that. But you know, that's really true. When that next thing that you're about to lose suddenly becomes more important than the next drink. And step one deals with that. And it comes from total and complete surrender, you know. And how did I get there? I mean, for me, you know, a bottom, for me, the last few years of my drinking were just drink problem, you know. Inside of 10 months, I totaled 3 brand new vehicles in a drunken blackout. I had 2 DUIs in less than 5 months. And both of them were 0.30 or higher, 0.35. And both of them were before midnight, and I was on my way to another bar. You know, I have to look at the insanity of this thing. And 5 trips inside of 2 years. I got sober down in Florida, but 5 trips inside of 2 years to Pinellas County Jail, and they were all alcohol related. And I can tell you that it's real easy to find God when you're in jail. It's real easy, you know. It's real easy to come out of a blackout and say, please get me out of another one. You know, I won't do it again, you know. Because, see, I have a tendency of telling myself it'll be different the next time. And what I do is I get out of jail or get out of the hospital or get the direct car out of the ditch or whatever it is, and I immediately go to the bar and I pick up a drink. And I don't know anything about this mental obsession or the physical addiction. I don't know anything about that, you know. My mind's always planning the next drink, it's thinking about the next drink, where I'm gonna get it, how I'm gonna get it, and my body doesn't let me stop drinking once I pick it up. But I don't know that, you know. I don't know where I'm going with that. I don't know anything about this. Now, in the 12 and 12 on page 21, I just want to read a couple of things here. It says, but upon entering AA, we soon take quite another view of this absolute humiliation. And we just heard the reading here about the difference between humility and humiliation. We perceive that only through utter defeat are we able to take our first step toward liberation and strength. Our admissions of personal powerlessness finally turn out to be firm bedrock upon which happy and purposeful lives may be built. And, you know, it's through this, it's through my biggest weakness that I found my strongest asset. You know, it's through this total defeat, so to speak, that I found, you know, my strongest point, one of my strongest points. And I believe that like I said, once again, this is all based upon my bottom. You know, and I don't think that the degree of a bottom is really all that important. I really don't. I was a low bottom drunk. I've met a lot of people that didn't have to go through and do what I did. You know, they didn't have to lose the things that I lost. What we lost, what we lose is ourselves. And through all of this, you know. And I don't believe that with me, until the suffering's bad enough, I'm not going to do anything about it. You know, I have to reach that level of defeat, you know. And that's tough for me. And on page 24 in the 12 and 12, why all this insistence that every AA must hit bottom first? The answer is that few people will sincerely try to practice the AA program unless they have hit bottom. For practicing AA's remaining 11 steps means the adoption of attitudes and actions that almost no alcoholic who is still drinking can dream of taking. Who wishes to be rigorously honest and tolerant? Who wants to confess his faults to another and make restitution for harm done? Who cares anything about a higher power, let alone meditation and prayer? Who wants to sacrifice time and energy in trying to carry AA's message to the next sufferer? No, the average alcoholic, self-centered in the extreme, doesn't care for this prospect, unless he has to do these things in order to stay alive himself. And that right there is the answer. Unless he has to do these things in order to stay alive himself. So it's a matter of life or death. You know, it's a matter of life or death. And I truly believe that step one is the only step that I have to take and I have to do 100%. The other 11, you know, I can do it the best of my ability. Whatever I'm able and capable to do at that time. But I truly believe with all my heart and soul that if I don't adhere to step one 100%, I will never acquire any contented sobriety. I believe that. I really do. In the big book on page 58, we already heard it, but I'm going to read it again. And it is chapter 5, How It Works, the first paragraph. And it says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed a path. And an old timer told me one time that he heard that Bill W. once said that if he could change any one word in the big book, it would be the first word in this paragraph, and he would change rarely to the word never. Never have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who do not recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program, usually men and women who are constitutionally incapable of being honest with themselves. There are such unfortunate. They are not at fault. They seem to have been born that way. They are naturally incapable of grasping and developing a manner of living which demands rigorous honesty. Their chances are less than average. There are those, too, who suffer from grave emotional and mental disorders, but many of them do recover if they have the capacity to be honest. Once again, it's about honesty. And, you know, total honesty and humiliation. And the definition I've been told of humiliation, and it was kind of in the reading of the daily reflection, is not thinking less of myself, but thinking of myself less. And believe me, I wasn't thinking that way when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous in a way. For me, when I first came to Alcoholics Anonymous, step one was really hard for me because I was raised old school. I was raised that, you know, tough guys don't cry and I don't need any help and you know, I can fix this thing on my own. And it was really hard for me to accept the powerlessness. There came a point in time when I really could honestly look to and admit the fact that I did finally believe that I was alcoholic. But the word powerlessness in step one really got me. It was really hard for me to accept being powerless. I could see the unmanageability in my life. My life was a mess. But strangely enough, I didn't connect it with the drinking, you know. And my sponsor at the time he had to sit down with me and he had to point out to me, you know, the craziness and the insanity of this disease, you know, and we had to work on that. And he had to show me that everything was fear-driven and that I was, it was all self-centered, you know. Because my attitude was, if you had the problems I had, if you had things going on in your life the way that I do, you'd drink too. And that was my, you know, always pointing a finger of blame at somebody else or something else. And I was powerless, but the booze made me feel all powerful, you know. I like to say that in the beginning, alcohol wasn't my problem, it was my solution. It really was, you know. It made me who I thought I needed to be and who I thought I wanted to be. And in the end, it was to, you know, it was to bring me down. And not only until I could not only admit but accept the fact of being powerless, I couldn't get through this. I couldn't get through step one. I couldn't do it. And it was more about the acceptance than it was admitting. I like to say that's like the fine print. In the step that we don't read, it's not only admitting but accepting the fact. Because for me, that's 100%. That's the all out. That's all or nothing. Is the acceptance. In page 21, in the 12 and 12, in there it reads that every natural instinct cries out against the idea of personal powerlessness. You know, that was me. You know. All my being said that I can do this myself, you know. And step one tells me that I have to humble myself. I have to reach out my hand and I have to find somebody and say, you know, I'm hurting. I'm powerless and I need help, you know. And I need to admit and accept the fact that's where things are. And, you know, with the guys that I sponsor today and that I work with, It's the same thing. That's what I have to do. You know, I have to sit down with them, and we have to talk about this, and we have to discuss, excuse me, the insanity of this. You know, and look at the craziness and the self-centeredness, and are these guys, are they running away from themselves? You know, are they drinking everything away? Are they drinking at everything? You know, pointing a finger of blame at everything and everybody else when I got 3 points back at me, and at this point in time, we start to finally realize that this is an inside job, that I need to work on the inside to take care of the outside. You know, I spent a lot of time trying to make the outside look okay so that I would feel better on the inside. And step one tells me that this is where it all starts. You know, this is the beginning for me. Step one is the beginning for me. This is my foundation. You know, I got to build everything off of this. So the stronger I build this foundation, the stronger everything else is going to be left on top of it, which is the rest of my program and the remaining 11 steps. On page 22 in the 12 and 12, because I think of how things, like I said, have changed, and it says, in AA's pioneering time, none but the most desperate cases could swallow and digest this unpalatable truth. Even those last gaspers often had difficulty in realizing how hopeless they actually were. But if you did, and when these laid hold of AA's principles, with all of the fervor with which the drowning seizes life preservers, they almost invariably got well. That is why the first edition of the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, published when our membership was small, dealt with only low bottom cases. Many less desperate alcoholics tried AA, but they could not succeed because they could not make the admission of hopelessness. You know, once again, I'm back to the hopelessness. I'm back to the total honesty and humility and accepting. It's a tremendous satisfaction to record that in the following years, this changed. Alcoholics who still had their health, their families, their jobs, and even 2 cars in the garage began to realize their alcoholism. As this trend grew, they were joined by young people who were scarcely more than potential alcoholics. They were spared that last 10 or 15 years of literal hell the rest of us had gone through. Since step one requires an admission that our lives have become unmanageable, how could people such as these take this step? It was obviously necessary to raise the bottom to the rest of us had hit to the point where it would hit them. By going back in our own drinking histories, we could show that years before, we realized if we were out of control, that our drinking even then was no mere habit, that it was indeed the beginning of a fatal progression. To the doubters, we could say, perhaps you're not an alcoholic after all. Why don't you try some more controlled drinking? Bearing in mind, meanwhile, what we have told you about alcoholism, this attitude brought immediate and practical results. It was then discovered that when one alcoholic had planted in the mind of another the true nature of this malady, that person could never be the same again. Following every spree, he would say to himself, maybe these AAs are right. After a few such experiences, often years before the onset of extreme difficulty, he would return to us convinced he had hit bottom, as truly any of us had. John Barleycorn himself had become our best advocate. So for me, the bottom, you know, getting the bottom, whether I could bring the bottom up to me or whatever it is, you know, that's what it's all about. And it's the honesty, the humility, and you know, the admission of I don't want to say defeat, but total surrender, you know, giving up the fight. And you know, step one is where it all begins, and you know, it's something that I continue to work on a regular basis. You know, I continue to revisit excuse me, step one on a regular basis, and it's what keeps me going today. You know, one thing I want to read real quick, and it's not really just step one, but it pertains to everything, and it reads: abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then. Thank you.
Oh, you don't go anywhere. You're not off the hook yet, sir. This is the time, now if I can figure out which button to push on, oh, the bottom, thank you, I knew there was something, that we are, if anyone has any questions, did you raise your hand?
Oh, no, sorry.
questions, okay, let's keep it,
yeah, you can't point it,
that's right.
Hi, Steve, Paul, alcoholic.
Hi, Paul.
Steve, you had mentioned that you really struggled more with the acceptance part of step one than the admitting part. I found that too, and it wasn't until I got into the steps much later that I discovered that it was ego and pride were the two biggest blocks I had to it. I was just wondering if you found that to be the case in your own situation.
Absolutely. You know, and I think with that ego deflation comes with that surrender, you know, and the surrender for me is not, like I said, it's not defeating, which is what I thought in the beginning, you know, that's why I struggled with it, was because I felt defeated, you know, and I come to find out you just put down the armor and quit the fight, you know, but I did, it was definitely ego, no doubt. Thanks.
Question? I have a question. I was wondering, you know, as far as coming to accept or just kind of that aha moment, you've been around in the program a long time, and I was wondering which of those old school analogies about powerlessness was the one that hit you between the eyes?
I'm sorry, can you run?
Which of the old school analogies, you know, the examples that the old timers would give about powerlessness? I mean, I can think of one. I was told that the fight's over, you lost. I was wondering if you had any, which of those old sayings kind of stuck with you and kind of got that brain to work on the powerlessness and accepting it?
To be honest with you, just not all that long ago, a couple of months ago, it was out here at a men's retreat, and in one of the small group discussions, one of the guys was talking, and he was a military guy. He was retired military, and he was talking about it, and he was explaining what surrender is, and he explained it in a military term, and that's basically not giving up, but laying down the weapons and stopping the fight. And for me, you know, all these years later, that really struck home with me, and it really made a lot of sense. It's not about being defeated or being brought down or anything else. It's about just stopping, you know, just stopping the fight.
Thank you.
Jim Alcoholic.
Hey, Jim.
You said that when you first got here, you didn't know that you were really here necessarily to get sober, and that's the case for me too. I stood up and said, "Hi, I'm Jim. I'm an alcoholic," but I wasn't sure what the heck I was really at that point. I'm still trying to figure out when I really realized and really admitted, and like you said, accepted that I'm powerless over alcohol. My life had become unmanageable. Do you kind of remember, where that really took place for real?
To be honest with you, no, I really don't. You know, I mean, that's a really strong point, because I think about that. And like you said, to go into a meeting, I mean, the first meeting I went into, I stood up and I stayed this time. On July 15th, 1989, I went in and I admitted. I stood up and I admitted to the group. But for me to stand up and say it is one thing, for me to actually accept it inside. And I don't know when that was. I really don't. I know it wasn't right away. And I did struggle with that. And my sponsor and I worked on that for a while, you know. And what he had to do, like I mentioned, he had to sit down and we had to talk about the insanity of this thing, you know. The craziness and how... it was all about me, you know, and if you had the life I had, you'd drink you'd do all this stuff too. But the fact that of the alcohol having a grip on me, and like I said, the mental obsession and the physical addiction, none of that really sunk in right away. And it was really hard for me to grasp that and accept it. It really was. And I honestly don't remember. It was a few months into my sobriety before I was really willing to even look at that. But I continued, I just kept coming back, and I think that's the important thing. In the beginning, when the old-timers would tell me that, you know what, kid, just keep coming back. And I did. I just kept coming back, and it finally got me. And I believe, I really do believe that if, no matter what, if you just keep coming back, I think AA will get you. I really do. Thanks.
Hello. I'm an alcoholic. I'm at the dentist. Steve, I came here about 6.5 years ago because I wasn't an alcoholic, because I didn't believe that there was a disease. About 22 years ago, I went to a rehab family weekend to visit my son, and had a great conversation with a counselor and a discussion about the disease and willpower. My question to you is, did you struggle with that? Did you believe it was a disease?
You know, the first time I went, I was first introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous, I want to say it was like 1981. And I have a brother-in-law that's in a fellowship. He's about 5 years sober at the time, and he took me to a meeting. And I still remember the meeting. I still remember going. I don't remember anything about it. It was a young people's group in Erie. And at the time, I met John Mowry, and I met Joe Dival and a few other guys. And that's why I say I was introduced to AA. And I believe the seed was planted at that point in time. But I wasn't ready. You know, I didn't even want to... I thought it was all hocus pocus. I really did. I thought it was all, brainwashing and, witchcraft and whatever you want to call it. But when I came back around, and a lot of things led up to me getting to Alcoholics Anonymous in 1989 on that Saturday night in July, and which I don't have time to tell you about. And I don't believe any of it was coincidental. And what it amounted to was I was in the process of moving again, and a guy was sitting on the steps watching me, and didn't introduce himself, didn't offer to help, nothing. But at some point in time throughout that day and into that evening, we talked, and I don't remember what we talked about. I don't remember anything about it. But that night, he took me to my first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous that I'd stayed this time around. Now, did I believe it was a disease in the beginning? No, I don't know what I believed. I really don't. Like I said, I don't know that I, you know, once again, I was running from another landlord. I was skipping out on another deal. I was scamming again. I didn't have a driver's license again. I'd just gotten out of jail. You know, and all these things were going on, and I wanted all that to stop. I just wanted all that bad crap to quit happening. And for whatever reason, and I believe it was from back in 1981, from when I went to that one meeting, that one night, I think that seed was planted, it sprouted a little bit, and there is no doubt in my mind whatsoever that it was divine intervention that night. That God was there, that God put that guy, Jack his name was, in my path, who took me to my first meeting. And ironically enough, Jack wasn't able to stay sober himself. You know, Jack actually died in alcoholic death. You know, and I've thought about that numerous times, that how come I got this thing and he didn't, you know, and I don't know, you know. I know the transformation for me today is that when I first came here, after a while I wanted to be here and I knew I needed to be here. Today I know I need to be here, I want to be here, but I realize today that I get to be here. Not everybody gets to be here, you know. And it all starts with step one.
Hi, Steve. My question is I've heard over the years that step one is the only one that you take 100%. Can you give me a little feedback on when do you think that actually happens? Is it right away, or how does that work?
I think with me, I believe that with all my heart. I've been told that by numerous old-timers. My sponsor today still says that regularly. And I don't know, with myself, I don't think it happened immediately, no. Because, once again, it was the acceptance factor. It was easy for me to look at my life being a mess, even though I still didn't want to equate it with drinking. And I want all that bad stuff to stop happening, and I can come into here, and you can tell me to say I'm an alcoholic, and I can stand up and admit that. I can tell you I am. But until I can accept that, and I really do believe that small print in the step that we don't see, is not only I admit it, but I have to accept it. And until, I can only speak for myself, but until I could accept that, and I don't know when it was, but I know it wasn't right away, was I able to do that. And at that point in time, I truly believe that was the 100%.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, my name's Samir, I'm an alcoholic. I just want to say thank you. I really enjoyed your talk.
Thank you.
I'll just quickly say I can understand when I read Bill's story about like that hope, like the people who really had to go to real, you know, when there wasn't really even a cure, and the ringer, as they say, and you know, I had a little glimpse of the ringer, I guess today I can kind of understand a little bit about wow. You know what I mean? How hard people must have tried without, and then they were really trying to stop, and so I just wanted to say that. But my thing was I have this problem. So you said this first step, powerlessness over drinking, and I'm trying to keep it there. I just sometimes I throw a hissy fit and I look around and I'm like, well, I have to accept everything around me, you know what I mean? Oh, I got to accept this, the guy, whatever. And if you have any words about just the application of this 100% step to my drinking and anything like that, and if it applies to anything else, or...
Oh, I truly believe it does. I mean, that's a good statement, because I know, once again with myself, that I have to realize that it's people, places, and things. You know, after I got sober and I was here a period of time, and I started to realize, and I was told and I was taught that drinking was really just a symptom of my disease, you know. And I can still go there today. and just not smell like a drunk, you know? So it's all based upon my spiritual conditioning. And the big book tells me that I'm only granted a daily reprieve. And that's what it's all about, you know? So step one for me, yeah, is way more than just powerless over alcohol. I'm powerless over people, places, and things. And it doesn't mean I have to like everything, but really, you read the acceptance pamphlet, and I truly believe that. It says that nothing, absolutely nothing in God's world happens by accident. And I believe that with all my heart. It doesn't mean I have to like it, but it makes it a whole hell of a lot easier if I can accept it, you know. And it's the same with people in meetings. You know, they say if you love everybody in AA, you're doing the right thing. If you like everybody, you're not going to enough meetings. Don't have to like it, just got to accept it. Makes it easier.
Yeah, my name is Brian. My question is, you've been clean for quite a while now, and when you first came in, did you have cravings or did you become complacent, and is that why you revisit step one, to remind yourself that you're powerless? Because I've been clean for about 2.5 years, a little over 2.5 years, and I've not had any cravings, I've not had any desire. I'm determined that I'm not going to drink anymore, you know, so.
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know when it was. It was fairly early in my sobriety, but it wasn't right in the very beginning, no. I didn't have real drastic desires, and I have to say I didn't go to a rehab or a detox, and I wouldn't recommend it to anybody, but I detoxed myself at home, and it wasn't pretty. I saw a lot of crazy stuff, and I went through a lot of craziness, but for a period of time, and I don't know how long it was, yes, I did want to drink. And I do remember talking to my sponsor at the time. His name was John DeSilva, and John was very, 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 very big on the first three steps, especially step three. And he was real big on gratitude, and I'm a very grateful person because of that today, you know. And when John finally kept pounding that into my head, I can tell you that at some point in time, I got on my knees and I asked God to lift the obsession to drink. And I can honestly say that I haven't really had a desire to drink since. Have I thought about it? Yeah. Have I dreamed about it? Numerous times. I just had a drunk dream not too long ago. And that's good. That's healthy for me. But my desire to drink, I can honestly say, was lifted a long time ago. I would say probably within maybe the first 6 months of my sobriety. But in the beginning, though, I wanted to drink. I wanted to drink. And I didn't really want, I really didn't want anything to do with AA. I really didn't. I came here because I didn't know where the hell else to go. But like I said, that guy was there that day, and I truly believe God put him there. And man, may he rest in peace. I am so grateful he was there for me that day.
Okay. Thanks.
I'm Robert, definitely an alcoholic. Didn't reinforce what you say about step one. I was in the program for 6 years, and I went back out thinking that I wasn't powerless anymore over alcohol. That step one is very important. I wish I would have really watched that. And I was really not ever in my life that I had to have it, like at any one time did I have to go, you know, I could stay off it a while, and I never got where I had to have it daily or weekly or whatever. Well, maybe weekly, but I thought I was cured. Crazy, and I had nothing going wrong, or you know, there's no reason I had to go out. It was crazy. I just.
Questions you wanted to ask?
No.
Okay. All right then. Okay. Does anyone have a question? Anyone else have a question?
Actually, though, real quick, though, just to touch on what you just said, I mean, what I was getting out of that was, what I was going to say was, for myself, every single day, every single morning, when I get on my knees in the morning, I revisit the first three steps. I admit that I am powerless. And I tell myself, I know only he can restore me to sanity, and I recite the third step prayer. Because I have to do that. I need to remind myself on a regular basis that I'm powerless over this. Because even though I don't have a desire to drink, I don't want to drink, I truly believe that if I forget where I came from, that I'm destined to go back. I really do believe that. And I don't want to go back there. You know, I don't ever want to go back. And, you know, when I was about, I don't know, back a couple of years before I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I quit drinking on my own for about 10 months. And I didn't do anything but just not drink. I still went into bars and hung out with my buddies and shot pool and drank Pepsi. And, you know, I still was doing all of that. Because I didn't, you know, I didn't know anything about this one day at a time thing. But I was going to do this on my own, you know. And the old saying, hang in a barbershop long enough, you're going to get a haircut, came true. And I don't know what happened. All I can tell you is on a Friday night, and I was out with the guys shooting pool, drinking Pepsi. And I came out of a blackout Saturday morning coming back from Buffalo after partying all night. And I got in a real bad car accident that day. And that basically started my last drunk for the next 3 years. I didn't draw a sober breath. I don't know why. I didn't go out that Friday with any intention of drinking any alcohol. You know? So I don't ever want to forget that. I need to remember that because I'm only one drink away from a drunk just like you are. Just like anybody else in this room.
And we're going to move to our last question.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Steve, at the beginning of the meeting when you were speaking, you mentioned something, and I can't remember how you put it, something about the mind and the body and the spirit, and you were at a point where you're, I don't know what it was, but I saw a bunch of people nodding their heads, and your description was really good, and I can't remember exactly how you put that. You were talking about, you know, the when you were drinking or when you didn't want to drink but you had to. I can't think of what it was. If maybe you two remember what he said or how he put it. I wanted more feedback.
I was late. You covered for me, Nadine.
You were actually here. You were actually here when he said that, so I don't know.
I know. I'm sorry. I wish I could. Probably when I'm on my way home, I'll think of it. I'll call you.
And thank you. It will be on the CD. Yeah, so that you'll have to.
Oh yeah, my dear.
Yeah, we have a real good price on these recordings.
So, I'm sorry. I wish I did. I can't recall what you're talking about.
I want to thank you. I mean, you're kind of off the hook unless you've got a final comment to offer us. But first of all, I want to thank you, and what a ton of insight and experience you offer to us. So,
and I guess I can say thank you.